Support for NPR podcasts comes from MasterCard, accepted worldwide. There are some things money can't buy. For everything else, there's MasterCard.
From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. When I heard that the music of the Beatles was being remixed and reworked for a new Las Vegas extravaganza by Cirque du Soleil, I was sure I'd hate it. The only bright side was that George Martin, the Beatles' producer, would work on the project. But then again, he's 80 years old, and by his own account, he's going deaf. Then I heard George's son was going to work on the soundtrack called Love. Not knowing much about Giles Martin, it just seemed like nepotism, and I got worried all over again. But being a Beatles fan from before the first Ed Sullivan TV appearance, I had to listen to the CD. In fact, I got the audio DVD version with surround sound, and this is what I heard. Sounds are astonishing, and I wanted to know how someone, born after the Beatles had already recorded their last record, could be up to the task of remixing and altering their music. So I called up Giles Martin and found him, appropriately enough, at Abbey Road Studios in London.
People think that, you know, if you're the son of someone like George Martin, you know, you grew up in the sort of, I don't know, this crazy Beatles household. But really, I think I grew up at a time when my father, and I think probably the Beatles as well, were trying to get as far away from the Beatles as possible, in a way. It kind of, the whole thing shattered into a million pieces, and they all went in their different directions.
But you're still in a house of a talented arranger and producer. He's still doing work. Were you around music a lot?
It's funny. We in our house, my mum didn't like having speakers around, which is quite funny for my dad. So we didn't really have a hi-fi at home. I remember.
You're kidding.
I remember growing up, and my dad used to be checking mixes he'd done in the car, which is very funny. It's kind of an English thing, I suppose. So, you know, we did, obviously. There were pianos. You know, my dad would play the piano. I remember he was writing the music for Live and Let Die, the film.
Right.
When
James
I was a kid,
and
the James Bond film. And I was at preschool, I guess I was three or four, and they said, "What does your father do for a living?" It sort of did a round robin for the little kids. And I said, "My dad doesn't do anything, he just sits at home and plays the piano." Which my parents were hugely insulted by this. You know, it's like, we're not unemployed. So, we did it. You know, it does rub off on you.
So where did it take you? Did you become a musician? I know your name, you've done some production.
I've always played, and I remember saying to my dad when I was 14, I said, "Listen, I want to be a musician. That's what I want to do." And he said, "You know, why don't you do something else? I mean, it's very difficult to do this. You know, it's not." He actually says, "You know, I don't think I'll ever really be good enough to make it." He said when I was 14, and that for me was just devastating at the time. And at the same time, being deeply aggressive as a person, I said, "Right, I'll show you, Dad."
Yeah.
And sort of went off. And so I've worked with people like Elvis Costello and Kate Bush and Jeff Beck. And I do feel lucky because, you know, my dad's George Martin. That's opened so many doors for me.
But a lot of doors will start shutting if you don't have some talent. So,
yeah, you can stick your foot in them, though.
Right, there you go.
No, it's true. I mean, you doing this Beatles project, for instance, working for Apple. Part of me thinks when it came about, I thought, you know, this is really nepotism at its purest form. And at the same time, you know, you do realize that, you know, Paul McCartney's not going to be happy with the work I'm doing. You know, just because I'm my dad's son.
Yeah, that's you.
There you know, go. So you get to that stage and you realize, and it's actually quite nice in a way because you kind of, I start with the most negative feeling in the world more than anyone else would do, saying, "God, you know, you're only doing this because you're your father's son," and I sort of have to win against that each time.
Yeah. Let's do the quick and dirty short story. Daddy, tell me this story one more time, which is the collaboration that went on. Let's first start with the bigger picture. George Harrison is a friend of the founder of Cirque du Soleil. His name is
Guy Laliberté.
And so Cirque du Soleil wants to do something with Beatles music. George Harrison doesn't want it to be the same old stuff, just a rehash. So something more interesting needs to be done. That quick and dirty?
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, they were friends. They're friends of the Formula One racing circuit. And I think what happened with George is that they thought it'd be a great idea to do something with Cirque. And he persuaded Paul and took him to Vegas, actually, to go and see O, a show called O, which is a great show. And they kind of didn't really know how they wanted to do it. So, yeah, they didn't want to do a Mamma Mia type thing either. They didn't really want to, you know, a group of French Canadians right. joining arms on stage and singing Hey Jude.
So you went ahead and put together some sort of demo tape. Describe what that demo tape was, who heard it.
It became apparent that we should do something that's kind of, in you know, shows off the Beatles, you know, individually as well as the sum of their parts. So Neil Aspinall, who's the head of Apple and was the original Beatles roadie, he drove the van and now he runs the company, you know. He said, you know, what sort of thing are you thinking about? And I said, why don't we try doing a gig that never happened? You know, Beatles stopped touring in 66. And it kind of was disappointing because they still played live, but they only played live for my dad in the studios. But when they played live very, very well. You know, Come Together, for instance, is just them playing live. And it has such a sound to it. Yeah. And I don't think they're really credited as a great live band, which they were. So we decided to do a gig that never happened. I thought the best way to start a gig was starting off with a drum solo, a drum solo, corny as that may be. I had this vision of this drum solo starting, Ringo's big drum kick, because Ringo's not seen as a drummer, he's seen as a character to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And then Get Back went into that solo. And the only reason why they worked is they're in the same tempo. And so when I did the same thing with Tablas with Here Comes the Sun, and we played around with Lion the Walrus a bit, and we created this sort of demo soundtrack of linking music together in the same way that my dad used that inspiration for, inspired by his ideas for the second half of Abbey Road. And we played that to the Beatles. And
at that time would have been Paul and Ringo, yeah?
Paul and Ringo and Yoko and Olivia. Yes, I mean, they all have equal share, equal sort of says in these things. And you know, they loved it. In fact, Paul and Ringo came in and they said, you know, maybe you should go a bit further. So I played them. I'd mixed Tomorrow Never Knows with Within You Without You. And I thought that's something that was going to get me fired, actually. I thought this is going to, that's going to really kick me out of the corporation. And they loved that. They thought this is the way to go. And it kind of opened the door. They just said, right, you can do whatever you like.
I'd like to do something with you. I'd like to play a song. And I want you to talk over, if you wouldn't mind, talk over the cut for us. What hit me and what made me fall in love with this record was listening to this.
The director of the show said, listen, we want to do Kite. And we thought, well, that's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
We wanted to do it so it's a dark Victorian circus. We wanted it to be a happy thing. And this was, we thought, was great because we were worried about it being Vegas, it being Cirque, that it would be all very happy, happy, chirpy. So we thought, right, let's make it quite an evil circus that goes wrong.
For the benefit of Mr. Kite, there will be a show tonight on trampoline. The Hendersons will all be there. Late of Pablo Frank is there. What a scene.
Basically, what you're hearing in the verses is just Kite with some ambient circus noise behind that was on BBC tapes. When Henry the Horse comes in, you have Good Morning sound effects coming in. You have the animals from Good Morning. Traditionally, John Lennon put the animals on so they'd eat each other. At the outro.
Say that one more time.
When John Lennon asked Jeff Emmerich to put the sound effects on, he wanted the sound effects to be animals that would eat each other. And it didn't actually quite work out. I think you've got a horse following a sheep or something like that, which is really weird.
One went over my head. Ain't you sure the public, their production will be second to none? And of course, Henry the Horse dances the waltz.
And then there was a sort of pressure, there's always a pressure from the Beatles as well to do something different, to try and create some sort of tilt that makes you wake up and kind of not take the Beatles for granted, do you know what I mean? So have another idea slam in your face.
Okay.
And I was actually sitting in the bath and thought, wait a second. I Want You, She's So Heavy, why don't I just stick that in and see whether I can go from one to the other?
Let's give a listen to this. This was the moment for me.
And Mr. H will demonstrate 10 Somersets he'll undertake on solid ground. Bing, bing, some days in preparation, a splendid time is guaranteed.
I mean, the sounds on this are just incredible.
And tonight, Mr. Kite is topping the bill.
And then I found these mad, manic laughter off. The Master of Piggies has this laughter on it. So I stuck that over the top, and then I thought, what else will work here? And suddenly found that Helter Skelter vocal. Because I wanted that scream, basically, to tie things together.
Coming down fast.
And suddenly it becomes this sort of strange, like, almost like, you know, it's 4-4 over 6-8. And it kind of creates that sort of just mayhem. And I remember I played this to Paul, and he went, God, that's mad. And he said, what's next? I said, Help. He goes, what have you done with Help? I went, not much, actually. He goes, okay, move on then. And that was the kind of taskmaster I was working with. But it was good fun. You know, I think it makes people smile, this record.
That's right.
And that's the same. That enthusiasm is the same as that, you know, you get from suddenly breaking the code, as it were.
Uh-huh. How did you organize it all? You know, you said, I remember there was a D minor chord in this, a D minor chord in that.
To be honest with you, I really approached the project thinking they were going to fire me at any stage, because I didn't think it was going to go ahead. I thought, you know, it's very nice to let me have a go, but really, surely there might be someone better you want. And so I realized, actually, that the Beatles catalogue hasn't been backed up properly. And so I decided to back it up. And so I took all the songs and I made notes on each one. And the great engineers here at Abbey Road actually transferred everything to Pro Tools, and I went through it all each track and just made notes on each track. Mm-hmm.
So are you saying to me that, I'm going to interrupt because I just want to make sure I'm clear, that from top to bottom, you took all of the four track, which is what most of the stuff is, right?
Yeah.
And a track in the case of, I guess, Abbey Road, and put that all into digital form.
Yeah. That's the first thing I did, which is great, because I sat down with my dad. The two of us sat down, and I went through stuff with him. And I played him stuff that he couldn't remember, and I certainly wasn't aware of most of it, you know. So, and I wrote down keys and tempos and interesting parts. And
So did you then put it all in a spreadsheet of some sort in order to, you know?
I did, because that's how interesting I am. I'm fun at parties. I put it on a spreadsheet with keys and tempos, and it became essential to me to work, because otherwise you couldn't really do this, because even though it's great to have random elements, and actually some of the nicest things are from trying ideas and that the idea you have not working but something else working well, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, but you have to start from somewhere, and you can't mess around with keys and tempos too much, because then it doesn't become. It's not the Beatles anymore. It's now a computer doing it.
You're going through these original four-track, for the most part, tapes, listening to this stuff with your dad. What surprised you the most?
Probably the fact that they played so well, I think. The way they played as a band together. And I'd heard all these stories. You know, I'm not a Beatles expert, and I've become sort of one musically, I suppose, but not as far as historically goes. And my view is, you know, maybe they didn't get on with each other and all that sort of stuff, but they really gelled as a band, you know. Even in times where they're not meant to be getting on, I think in the studios they had a good time, and they really played well. They really dug in.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way.
And their youth as well comes through.
And they were 20. I mean, Paul is 27. The band is over, right?
That's
how young they were.
They're seen as being old now because, as humans, you know, two of them sadly have died, two of them are old, but they're captured in time on these tapes here at Abbey Road. And that's the thing that struck me more than anything else is A, how fresh the tapes are, and B, how well they played. And I'd sit with my dad going, you know, I thought it was smoke and mirrors before. I thought their records were like that, maybe because the engineer's talents and my dad's talents put together. But really, they made great sounds. You know, humanly, they made great sounds.
Now, on these four-track tapes, are there things on those tapes that never made it into the mix? And so there were things that, were there material that you used from songs that we hadn't heard before?
Yeah, that there were. I mean, obviously, they were fairly economical, actually. They didn't really waste much at all. But, I mean, someone said to me the other day, you know, where did you get that organ from I Want You She's So Heavy? And I was like, well, it's on the track. And they went, is it? And my fault, you could say, was I didn't actually listen to the originals when I was doing this. What I mean by the originals, the CDs or the records that everyone has. I didn't use those. I used the multi-track. So I didn't really think about what was on and what was not on. And so I just used bits that I thought sounded good.
That's good, because it's sort of like someone coming in from another planet and saying, starting a little fresher. Yes.
and no, it's true. And it's kind of better, because the records sound so great anyway. I mean, the mixes that were done by my dad and by the engineers back in the 60s are great. So if I'd started listening to those, I'd just be trying to copy them in a way. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to do that anyway.
They did amazing recording stuff. And when I first started listening to the record, the first thing I felt was, and don't be offended by this, but the first thing I felt is, I just want to hear the originals like this. I grew up on this stuff, hearing these things on 45s. On LP, and as good as our stereo was, this stuff never sounded. I want to hear every single Beatles song remastered. Is that project underway?
I think, but I mean, you have to understand, this isn't remastering. This is remixing.
This is remixing.
You know, and that makes a difference, yeah. Because
let's explain the difference to people.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, a remix is when you have the different elements. Say four tracks means there's four different separate recordings on one track, which you blend together as a mix. And you're creating a stereo out of that. Now, with remastering, all they're doing is they're taking the stereo and they're EQing that stereo in the same way you would maybe do treble and bass on your hi-fi. A lot of people have said, how do you make it sound, and how does it sound so fresh? And you go, well, the tapes do sound like that. And hopefully when they remaster, which I think they're going to do at some point, they'll sound exactly the same, they'll sound as fresh again.
How did you and your dad work together?
Well, what would generally happen is I sort of would spend every day here at Abbey Road. And my dad would come in two or three days a week, and I would bounce around ideas on Pro Tools and play them to him.
And Pro Tools is a digital editing system where you could line tracks up and move things around. And
it's basically, you know, it's scissors and tape of this generation.
Or word processor for the other.
Yeah, and this is what I'd work on. And I'd bounce around different ideas, and then my father would come in, and I'd play them to him. And he would go, I like that, that's not good, I like that, you know. And he'd kind of produce me doing it, if that makes sense. Yeah. So, for instance, I wanted Ringo to be on his own at the beginning of Octopus's Garden. I wanted a sort of dramatic effect. And you're kind of thinking about doing it, this as a show, as well as doing it as a kind of weird concept album. So I tried the Strings from Glass Onion at the end. It sounded a bit creepy, sounded a bit like, you know, Ringo's about to murder someone or be murdered.
I'm not, but Ringo wouldn't do that.
Yeah, Ringo wouldn't do that, but I made him sound like that. And so then I tried the Strings from Goodnight, and my dad came in and heard it, went, you know, I love that, but maybe you should try doubling up the first verse, not going to the second verse, you know. And that's the way we worked.
And the rules? What were the rules going into this?
Well, the rules were that we never wanted to make our sort of Martin sound on it. We want it to be a Beatles record. It is the Beatles controlling us. And what that means is that we never wanted to add any other music onto the album at all, apart from what's on tape.
So you're saying basically you wanted to make new music, but you weren't allowed to use any instruments, right?
Yeah, well, no, it's not even making new music. It's kind of paying homage to them.
Yeah.
You know, I suppose our rule was we didn't want to take any soul out of the Beatles. And it was funny, the first thing I did was the drum solo from the end going to Get Back. And the easiest way to do this is to put this in time. So you decide, you know, what I mean is the tempo doesn't vary. Ringo wouldn't slow down or speed up. And I did this like a modern, you do this in modern tracks. Hip-hop guys do this all the time. They put everything in time. And I did that to Ringo, and it sounded awful. It sounded like if I was told about this project, how I'd feel it would sound, you know.
Can I just paraphrase real quick? Yeah. I want to make sure I understood, which is that what happens with modern technology is you can make something that maybe drifts a little bit one way or another, the human factor of drumming, and you can make it just lock like a clock, right? And you did that to Ringo, and that sounded awful. Is that what you're saying?
It sounded like Beatles Beatles in the 80s.
Yeah.
So I scrapped that idea. So from then on, we realized that, you know, the heartbeat of this record has to be the heartbeat of the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the most important thing. So that was our rule, basically. And so we never wanted to speed things up too much. We never wanted to slow things down too much. We never wanted to change the key too much. Mm-hmm. It all had to be them and not us.
Good. Let's listen to another song. You tell me what's going on with Pick Lady Madonna. What are we hearing here?
We want to have some sort of up-tempo stuff. And the funny thing about the Beatles is that they're not a big up-tempo band. I thought it'd be great to combine sort of percussive elements. And here you've got the intro for Why Don't We Do It in the Road? And we have some vocal percussive sounds from Ubli Di Blada. There's a tambourine from a rough take of Lady Madonna.
Huh.
And it's kind of just creating some sort of party. The idea is to surprise people.
Yeah, yeah.
Not for people to sigh and go, oh, it's Lady Madonna.
Lady Madonna, children at your feet. Wonder how you manage to make ends meet. Who finds the money when you pay the rent? Did you think that money was heaven sent?
Lady Madonna is such a great track. It shows McCartney at his best. And it's funny, it's a four track, and he played the piano, and Ringo played brushes along with it, which is, you know, brushes on top of a snare drum. And then they went back in, and then the all Beatles got together, and they played along with that track. On top of that piano and brushes track, they played drums, bass, and guitars. Nowadays, that'd be the wrong way to do it. You always put drums down first. But, you know, Paul's playing with a piano. You know, his left hand, as they say, his bass lines on the piano are just so firm. They're such a good feel. And I thought, let's get Hey Bulldog in somewhere. It'd be great to get a Lady Madonna. And funnily enough, the only way I could get it to work was have Billy Preston's organ from I Want You She's So Heavy linking the two together. And then have Eric Clapton's guitar solo from While My Guitar Gently Weeps coming at the other end, because otherwise it sounds too much like an edit. So this organ comes in now. So that's the organ over top of Hey Bulldog.
From
I Want You She's So Heavy. And it's actually been sped up, as you can hear. It's a fairly fast playing.
Yeah, I didn't recognize
it. And the drums are still Lady Madonna. It's still Lady Madonna playing here. And this is Eric Clapton coming in from While My Guitar Gently Weeps. And he's now soloing over Lady Madonna. And it's funny, it just works. And it's one of those things that Eric Clapton and Billy Preston were there to kind of gel the two bits together. But I guess that's what they did on the records they played on anyway. So it's all music.
That's sweet. I'm going to do it. Let's do one more. This is sort of fun doing this with you. Let's do Come Together, the transition to Cry Baby Cry.
Of course,
and
yeah.
And Dear Prudence.
Come Together, actually, it's funny, it's one of my dad's favourite Beatles songs. He loves it. And it was the song that Paul and Ringo, when they came and heard it, they just listened to it and went, you know, this was such a good day. And that, for me, was the biggest feeling I got. It was like I felt like I was being part of the whole thing. But the thing is, we didn't want to fade anything. As this album is meant to flow from one to the other, you can't do fades, really.
Right.
And Come Together is one of the most famous fades. I had the same problem with All You Need Is Love. And my dad goes, you can't change Come Together, you can't do anything. And I said, listen, I've got an idea, I want to get out of it, because I've got to get into Revolution, which is, this is the requirement of doing a show. The director said, I want to go from Come Together to Revolution. But mm-hmm. I want something a bit creepy going between the two. And they had this idea of Helter Skelter or loud music. And I thought, I looked for ages, I was trying to work out what to do. And so I tried Dear Prudence, and I love Dear Prudence. I think it's such a great track. Not that you really recognize Dear Prudence
key.
As far as this goes. And that's the thing that bothered my dad. Right now you're hearing the guitars coming underneath.
Yeah.
And this is a major chord here. My dad goes, you can't have a major and a minor. I was like, yes, you can. Go for it. It just opens it out. And so, and Paul and Ringo liked it, so I won that battle.
So does your dad wince when he hears this?
He does. He still goes. It's too. It should go for another round. And I said, well, difference doesn't. I'm not looping. Yeah. And this bit here. This is the end of Cry Baby Cry. It's actually a song called Can You Take Me Back.
I love this little bit.
Underneath it, you have the strings around the Rigby. And you've now got the climax from Dan Life with the strings around the Rigby with Can You Take Me Back. This is the orchestral build-up with Dan Life without the orchestra on. And it was really to try and create something dramatic for a show, and it's funny, it kind of works on a record, because when Revolution comes in, you know, it really kicks in.
My couch on the 5.1 version.
Well, there we are. You say you want a revolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. You tell me that it's evolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out? Don't you know it's gonna be?
This is going to get a little geeky, but is this a remix of Revolution? Because it seemed much more separate, the guitars. I don't know who's on the right and who's on the left. But
we remixed everything. We were trying to be careful not to sound too modern with it. We also, at the same time, we wanted to, you know, things to kick a bit more. I think people go, you know, Ringo seems louder. I don't think he's louder. I think his drums are just a bit bigger. There's more top and bottom, I suppose.
And for you, the most satisfying thing on this and... on this whole project, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, I think probably Tomorrow Never Knows and Within You Without You.
Yeah.
Because it was the first thing I did that was very avant-garde, and it then opened the door for me. My dad said recently, he goes, you know, I wish I had that on Sgt. Pepper. And I think that's going a bit far, because I think the strings and the Indian instrument, that section on Sgt. Pepper is beautiful and much more interesting than this, perhaps. But for him to say that was a huge compliment to me. You kind of have to check yourself for a second and not become too difficult as a person when someone says that to you.
Well, thanks for spending so much time with us today. This is.
I know, it's been great. Really, it's been my pleasure. We should talk again soon.
I'd love to meet you and actually shake your hand if you ever come to Washington, D.C. We'll give you a grand tour.
I'd love to. And if you're in London, come to Abbey Road.
Thank you kindly.
Cheers, bye.
Giles Martin, the producer of Love, the soundtrack to the show by Cirque du Soleil, and the new album of music by the Beatles. From NPR Music, I'm Bob Boylan. It's All Songs Considered.
Saying good night to you all, and God bless you.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Borders, presenting books, music, and movie gift ideas from the Gift Squad. Details at BordersGifts.com.